Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
I feel like you hit the L in our last name like really hard that time. And I almost never do perform it that way or hear it that way.
There's a lot of vowels in there and it gets kind of mumbly.
And
so
right.
I try really hard to kind of say each syllable precisely.
And I appreciate that. It shows a certain reverence for the brand.
I'm relatively new to this last name.
I know. And I stumble in like a drunkard off the street. Like, I'm McElroy. I'm McElroy. It could be spelled any which way. Mm-hmm. There may or may not be an L in there. But you come in here with your eloquent diction.
Thank you.
And you just smash it right out of the freaking park, man.
Thank you so much.
Now, your first name, you could use some help with that. Your first name, you could...
Yeah,
you
could, do I stumble through that?
I got some notes. If you're taking notes. This is a show where we talk about things that are good, things that are wonderful, things that are nice, that are lifting us up, that are the winds beneath our wings. Mm-hmm. And there are still those things, and that's good. And I want to talk about a small wonder, which is this fresh, flirty, fun, might I even say sexy haircut that my wife, Rachel, gave me last night in our bathroom with a razor. I did a little touch-up work on the bangs.
You say with a razor, but I feel like that's a little misleading.
Clippers. I used a size... Well, she used a size 6 guard, faded up to an 8, full 8, up on the topless. And we're not trying to go crazy here, right? We're trying to reinvent the wheel. It looks good.
You do. You look fresh.
I feel good. God, it's the longest I've gone without getting a haircut in a very, very long time. And I feel a lot better. I feel a great weight has been lifted off my scalp, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a small wonder?
I am going to say the outdoor fan.
The outdoor fan.
The outdoor fan.
It's a wind you can conjure up with technology.
Uh-huh. You might say electricity.
You don't even have to wait for Mother Nature.
Mm-hmm.
You say, I am Mother Nature.
Mm-hmm. We have a very nice deck that we have invested time into, but still don't spend a lot of hours, you know, sitting out there.
The mosquitoes have invested more time into
it. Yes, yes. And so Griffin said, this is the time.
Yes.
I'm putting a fan up. I'm doing it. Let's not wait a day longer. And I'm grateful for it.
And now these dumbass mosquitoes fly up like, time to bite you. But then they get caught up in a whirlwind of our own creation and are blown hither and yon. Take that, you fucking bloodsuckers. God, I hate mosquitoes so much.
I know.
As much as we talk about things we love on this show, I could fill an entire another podcast of just like bad shit with just mosquitoes.
Uh-huh.
What the fuck are they doing? Who do they think they are?
Yeah, I don't know.
They're not good bugs. People are like, don't kill spiders because they're cool and they eat other bugs. And it's like, yeah, for sure. I'm with you on that. If a bee is flying around, don't get scared of it that it's going to sting you. It's more scared of you. Honeybees are great. Skeeto? Get the fuck out of here, Skeeto.
Yeah. No,
now we're going to get comments on Facebook like, actually, Skeetos are...
Excuse me, I am a mosquito.
I'm a Skeeto and I think we're pretty cool. Hey, I go first this week.
Okay.
This one's going to be so quick. I felt foolish a little bit while preparing it because I was like, ooh, I want to talk about this. But then I was like, I will be able to talk about this for about 90 seconds and then that will be it. It kind of evolved, though, this topic. I want to talk about remixes of Carly Rae Jepsen songs. You're laughing because I sent you one of these this morning. Like, you gotta
jam on
this.
Well, and Jess, I feel like you're going to find at least a dozen ways to talk about Carly Rae Jepsen. Just the minutiae.
Listen,
just to make sure that we continue to keep her in the orbit.
I use all the parts of the CRJ Buffalo, okay? And right now, the Buffalo part that I'm using is the remixes of her songs, because guess what? There's a billion, jillion of these. There's so, so many remixes of Carly Rae Jepsen songs. I couldn't quite put my finger on why. I think it's just because, like, her music is kind of poppy and accessible in a way that, like, makes it kind of easy to chop and screw. Like, it's made up of different sort of constituent components that are easy to kind of, like, dissect and then do your own sort of thing with.
Well, yeah, and, like, if a song is a bop, like, you want to remix it. You want to, like, bring a new dance energy to it, I feel like.
Yeah, so she has released a ton of, like, EP-length albums that are... remixes of some of her you know, biggest songs. The one that showed up in a Discover Weekly list for me, and I've just been listening to nonstop because I'm just crazy about it, is a remix of Runaway With Me off her seminal album, Emotion. by an electronic music artist named Imbrz, E-M-B-R-Z, all caps in the cool way. And I am just so wild about this remix. He's Imbrz is an Irish DJ who is all about making sort of soft dance music, like dance music that is not all like hard drops and pulsating beats, but just kind of like a little bit gentler than that, which I really appreciate. I think you could kind of slot it into the future bass genre, which is something I'm very, very into right now, which is just sort of like weirder percussion and like pulsating synths and just sort of gentle drops. And that
future
is
future bass. That's a thing.
That's a thing. That's a genre. Yes. Okay. Future bass. And yeah, I'm going to play a little bit of this remix right now. So you can get a feel for it. That background synth, that like wobbly, like sawtooth synth over the chorus is like my favorite sounding thing. Like I love how when it's, you know, a sound like that is like gated and wobbly that like intensely, like it kind of messes with your ears. I guess that's my ASMR is wobbly synths. But I also really like vocal chops where an artist can like take an a cappella vocal performance and then like turn it into its own instrument by just putting in little clips of it here and there to like turn it into a new thing. I think that's so cool.
Do you feel like you have a new appreciation for this kind of music now that you create music?
Yeah, this is the type of music that like if I could be, if I was like very, very skilled at like synth work, like making my own sort of synth sounds inside of synth engines and you know, mixing and mastering to a degree that I'm just like, I don't know how to do. This is the kind of music that like I feel like I would want to make because it's so cool. Like it sounds so cool and it's so listenable. And I really have been listening to like this song and other like sort of future bassy stuff like nonstop. But yeah, I think so. Like I at least know a little bit more of the language.
I feel like you're able to pick out like distinct sounds better than I do. Like I don't listen to music, I think, the same way that you do.
Well, I don't know. I think I feel that way about this particular genre because this particular genre is all about the sort of specific layering of just a ton of different sounds. Yeah. What I really, really like about this genre and this song and more of Imbrz's stuff is that you listen to it and it's because it is sort of gentler, because it is sort of quieter, you assume it is like a simpler thing, but there's actually a ton of stuff going on, like little clicks and pops that you may not realize, or like steady background, you know, ambient effects that you don't realize until you like listen to it a little bit more critically and realize like, oh, actually there's a lot of very, very specific stuff going on here that I really, really appreciate. And yeah, there's a lot. I really like a good remix. I like a good remix, especially of a song that you already really, really enjoy, because it's like you've found another facet of what makes that song good.
I feel like at the beginning of every remix, someone needs to shout, "It's the remix," right?
That would be helpful just to let me know.
It gets me more hype. Like, oh no, here we go.
Oh no would be your reaction?
Well, I'm trying to keep it clean.
If Billy Ray Cyrus, you know, oh, you didn't want to say.
I didn't want to say a curse.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, you're very...
I guess I could have said, oh, dang.
Yeah, that would have been better. makes it sound like...
I'm not afraid of it.
Right, that makes it sound like if Billy Ray Cyrus opened up the remix of Old Town Road, like, oh, no, I'm about to do it. Yeah. Oh, and there's another remix that I found here just because I wanted to play another one of Carly Rae Jepsen's of Party for One, which I don't think I've talked about on this show before.
Yeah,
fuck, that song rules. It's probably good. My favorite song off her newest album. This is they put out a full EP of just remixes of Party for One, and this is one of those remixes by More Giraffes to take us out. Hey, what's your first thing?
My first thing, and this, you're going to think maybe we've talked about this before, but I think we've only indirectly talked about it.
Okay.
And that is the sound of water.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm not talking about the film with the fish man. I'm talking about the actual,
okay,
the pleasing sound of water.
Do you think they will make a sequel to the Sexual Fishman movie called The Sound of Water, in which they become a sort of like country Americana duo, but under the sea?
I do enjoy that a lot. The fishman in a cowboy hat? Come
yeah,
on.
That'd be good. It would be like A Star Is Born, but sort of aquatic.
Oh, I love that. Can you?
I think it would go a little something like this.
Yeah, here we go.
Because they're underwater?
That's incredible. You can just pull that just at a moment's notice.
That's the part where she, like, you know.
So nice.
I know.
Hey, can I tell you about my thing, though?
Taste of Water? Well, I'm glad you asked. That one's going to be like the Bradley Cooper cooking movie that
there
I can't remember the name of.
Yeah. Oh,
Bradley Cooper runs the gamut of all of our human senses.
Is it called No Reservations?
No. You
I'm
are
thinking
of
the Catherine Zeta-Jones
film,
cooking movie.
Which I saw in theaters and is maybe the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. Anyway, we've stumbled so far away.
The Sound of Water. So I'm talking about the ocean. I'm talking about that creek. I'm talking about those like lovely little water sounds that are so soothing.
Okay. Can you make those with your mouth? Just to give me an example of what you're talking about.
Can I
about?
Do the wave sound?
Yeah,
That's
do the wave
easier.
Sound, please. Yeah, that sounds like a sick person.
It's a little Darth Vader.
A little bit. You want to try again?
Oh, I'm going to go again.
Yeah. And what sound is that? What water sound is that?
It's like the waves crashing.
I love how water is completely silent in the ocean until it hits something and then it goes.
Hey, I'm not the Foley expert over here. I leave that to you.
True.
So the sound of water actually has been studied because people love it so ding, ding much.
Okay.
And they specifically studied its impact on stress levels and that stress hormones have dropped 20 to 30% when they have studied it. When somebody listens to the sound of ocean waves, waterfalls, or splashing creeks.
Hmm.
They say, so the people that have studied it, like various, you know, sound engineers that have studied it, have said that water creates what they call like a broadband sound, which means that there aren't like little distinct noises that you pick out. It's just like a, like it overwhelms your sense of sound so much that your brain isn't trying to pick out like distinct noises.
Interesting.
So it's like calming in that way. This is an associate professor of biobehavioral health at Pennsylvania State says these slow whooshing noises are the sounds of non-threats, which is why they work to calm people. The idea, like I said, is that, you know, you're not hearing these distinct, less attractive noises. You're just hearing this like single sound, which relaxes your brain.
That's interesting. I was trying to think of something threatening that makes a sound like that. And I really could. It's not like a tiger comes up at you like, roar.
Well, that's what they said. So people are kind of trained just on like a primordial level,
right,
to distinguish between threat and non-threat. And so they did a 2012 study in a hospital setting. And so even at low volumes, at like a whisper level, alarms from hospital equipment would wake study participants from sleep 90% of the time.
Wow.
And half the time from deep sleep. So that's, you know, shallow sleep versus deep sleep. Meanwhile, the sounds of helicopters and traffic while reaching 70 decibels, which is almost twice as much sound, did not wake participants frequently as alarms, ringing phones, and human conversations would.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sitting here like thinking about this when I really don't need to. I require white noise to fall asleep at night,
yeah,
or else I can't.
Yeah, well, and that's what they talk about. Like the sound of water in some ways is more relaxing than the sound of white noise. And they think there's maybe some like, you know, amniotic
womby sort of
womb
experience.
Quality. Yeah. Or they even like, I was reading this kind of like earthy explanation that talks about how like we are majority water as people and
yo,
we have evolved from water creatures,
whoa,
onto land.
Yeah. I love that shit. In my DNA code, there's still some fish in there that's like, yeah, bud.
So you before have talked about like the creek behind our house and how pleasing it is when it rains.
Yes, it takes some doing, but once it's running, it's gorgeous.
We were sitting outside and there was kind of like wind in the trees, which had kind of an ocean sound to it. And it just reminded me how much I just love that ocean sound.
Yeah.
It is very just like automatically calming.
It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then those mosquitoes would come around. Oh, God. I'm so sick of those mosquitoes. I love the creek. I love the sound it makes. I love mm-hmm. its aesthetics, but the mm-hmm. mosquitoes love it even more, mm-hmm. and it drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. If I could press a button to explode all mosquitoes, I would do it.
Mm-hmm. Should you maybe run for office and have that be your platform?
Hey, it's me, Griffin McElroy. I don't know how, but I'm going to poison every mosquito on the planet. Join me in my beautiful crusade.
In my hate campaign.
Will I destroy parts of other parts of the ecosystem? Yes. Will there be collateral damage? Yes, absolutely. Are there things that love to eat mosquitoes? Of course. And are they going to also perish,
yes.
destabilizing the entire ecosystem? Yes. Is this an irresponsible thing for me, real Griffin McElroy, to be saying on a podcast? Absolutely it is.
Of course it is.
Do I hate mosquitoes that much that I don't care? Oh, yes.
Yes.
They bite you. That's my blood. That's my blood. I worked really hard to grow that blood inside me. Mm-hmm. I eat the hamburger and I turn it into blood in my body, I think. And I work really hard on that process.
So it's just, is it the biting? Is it the invasiveness of the biting? Or is it the after itching? Or is it all of it?
It's all of it. The itching I get over pretty quickly.
Oh, see, the itching is what I hate.
I don't like looking down and seeing a little mosquito with his snoot in my blood. Just like, hey, partner, mind if I have a little bit? I ate so many hamburgers to make that blood. Mm-hmm. And I only have so much of it. So stop it.
Hey, can I steal you away?
Yes, please. Hey, can I read a Jumbotron here? Because it would be very confusing if you read it.
Yeah, sure.
This one is for future Rachel, and it is from past Rachel, who says, Rachel, not you.
Thank you.
Your ears perked up. You sat up straight. Rachel, by the time you're hearing this, you'll be done with your thesis and have a master's degree. I've been spending a lot of time writing about Victor Frankenstein and his whole deal, so I hope you're taking a break and being proud of all the hard work you've accomplished. You're amazing. Love, Rachel from the past.
Congratulations, Rachel.
That is a congratulations. Rachel was looking for this message to be in May, so we may have jumped the gun a little bit. If that's the case, keep on grinding on Frankenstein. You are so close. You're going to get there because past Rachel said so in a prophecy foretold by crystals.
And Rachel's historically...
Never wrong.
Never wrong. Can I read the next one?
Yes.
This next message is for Felicia. It is from Austin. To Felicia, the shining star that inspires me every day. You are the greatest treasure I have ever known. You are a masterpiece of a woman, and I am eternally grateful that I am able to be your partner. I love you. My blessing of the cosmos. Yours, Austin.
Holy shit.
Woo, that's grand.
Blessing of the cosmos.
Yeah.
Do you think Felicia is, and a lot of people are talking about this. I read this in a lot of the tabloids, that Felicia is actually a constellation. That
I recognize that, I think. You know, when you look to the night sky.
This happens a lot, actually. Sometimes somebody will make a wish and a constellation will come to life like a weird science. And come down and fall in love like a mannequin.
I want to know who, if there was a movie, let's say, who would play Felicia, the constellation come to life?
I mean, Tyra Banks?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, thank you.
Gosh, that's good.
Yeah.
Perfect casting.
Yeah. Honestly, it sounded like I had to think for a while about that, but Tyra Banks was first thought. And then I was like, is there anybody better than Ty? And the answer was no. Nope. It's going to be Ty.
Video games.
Video games.
Video games. You like them?
Maybe you wish you had more time for them.
Maybe you want to know the best ones to play.
Maybe you want to know what happens to Mario when he dies.
In that case, you should check out Triple Click. It's a brand new podcast about video games.
A podcast about video games? But I don't have time for that.
Sure you do. Once a week, kick back as three video game experts give you everything from critical takes on the hottest new releases
to scoops, interviews, and explanations about how video games work
to fascinating and sometimes weird stories about the games we love.
Triple Click is hosted by
by me, Kirk Hamilton.
Me, Jason Schreier.
And me, Maddie Myers.
You can find Triple Click wherever you get your podcasts and listen at MaximumFun.org.
Bye.
Hey, can I hear your second thing?
Oh, yeah. In the category of things that I can't believe we haven't talked about before, and I looked in the site and it said no, we hadn't talked about, speaking of soothing water noises, the water noise that soothes me the most is the noise of water being circulated to a very specific temperature so that it may cook a protein to my exact specifications. I am talking about sous vide cooking. That's right, people. It's time.
Is it weird when you said circulated water? I thought you were going to talk about toilets.
Okay.
I thought you were going to just express a profound appreciation for the toilet.
I've talked about bidets before, almost certainly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's another sort of, listen, I have a lot of sort of water features in this house that are important to me, and sous vide is the number one thing.
Yes.
I think there's never been a better time to get into sous vide cooking. I think that it is it slotted into my work from home lifestyle in a way that was like incredibly good. And I think it will therefore slot into everybody's quarantine lifestyle in a way that is similarly fantastic. Sous vide cooking, if you do not know, is a method of cooking where you have a big container of water. We have a 16-quart container of water with like a special lid that a water circulator slots down into. We use one by Anova, which is the like general recommended brand. It's like $100. So there is a significant price investment, but it is my favorite thing that we own in the kitchen. And you take vacuum sealed food, which you can do with a vacuum sealer. We invested in one, but you could just do water displacement where you put a thing in a bag and then lower it into the water and it pushes all the air out. And so you have this vacuum sealed food and you can put whatever else in there with the meat. Usually like I say meat, you can cook whatever, but like I'll put a steak in there with like some rosemary and a little pat of butter and maybe some garlic, vacuum seal that up, get that marinade going, get that good flavor in there going, drop it into the water for at the specified temperature, at a specified length of time, and then you take it out, and it will be perfectly cooked through at the exact temperature that you set it at because of science and technology.
Yeah. And then, you know, you just like, you sear it or whatever. And
you
then
sear it to get some color on it.
Or it's very little effort on your part.
You also, like, I will admit, a little bit lazy with sous vide because, like, we were heating up some curry the other day and wanted some chicken to put in it, and I just sous vide some chicken. And you don't even have to sear that off because it's going into a curry. You just like plop that right into the thing and it's good. I defrost shit in the sous vide now because it is a no fail way of, you can't fuck it up, which is perfect. Nothing is more frustrating to me than spending a lot of time on a kitchen project. This is why I stopped baking bread, is because like it takes so fucking long and you work so hard at it.
Yeah.
And then it comes out and it's shit and you're like, oh God, I've wasted the entire day and a significant amount of food resources on this garbage food.
No, that's exactly true. It's like never too dry. Like there's no danger of overcooking it. Like it is always perfect.
You can freeze stuff in advance. We had one beautiful week where like on a Sunday I had like Henry took a long nap and I just prepped a bunch of different like bags in the freezer, like vacuum sealed bags of chicken and pork and steak and like all kinds of different stuff. Put that in the freezer and then you just set the circulator at the temperature that you're supposed to cook stuff at. Plop the frozen bags right in there, cook it for it. You can drop right in there frozen, man. You don't even have to defrost that shit.
This is what I don't understand. How does it adjust the cooking time if you put it in there frozen?
You have to do a little bit longer. They say like time plus 50%, but like even that has been like not necessarily true for me.
That's what blew my mind, right? That you could put it in there frozen.
You can put it right in there frozen. It does spike the water temperature down a little bit, so you have to wait for it to like climb back up. I think that probably adjusts for the extra time. But like everything that goes in that water ends up being the exact temperature that the water is as it's being circulated.
I tell this to Griffin pretty much every time he uses the sous vide. I have never been a huge fan of the red meat
because
I've had a lot of poorly cooked red meat and I have thought, who wants to eat something that requires you to chew this much?
Right.
Turns out if it is cooked well, You don't have to chew that much.
Yes, exactly. I never cooked, that or pork, really. I never really messed with. We did chicken, but like never in like a starring role. Usually the chicken would be like a thing that we would chop up and put into something else.
Yeah, well, and we'd be so nervous about undercooking it that we would cook it to a temperature where it was not particularly enjoyable.
Exactly, yeah. And so having this way of guaranteeing that you have cooked, I think for me, knowing that I have cooked this perfectly.
Yeah.
I have made this food I didn't. Technology and water and time made it perfect. But knowing that, like, I am serving up some dish that has been cooked perfectly is so just soul satisfying to me. And also, like, you know, it traps in, like, all the good juices in that bag. Like, it's not just that, like, the temperature has been, like, perfectly cooked. It's, like, tastes really fucking good, too. Yeah. So like it is an investment up front if you want like a decent circulator and you want like a vacuum sealer to make it less of a nightmare to do that stuff, like you are going to be spending money. But like it has not only given us a bunch of very, very good dinners and a bunch of very, very good meals, it has sort of like added a whole nother section of cooking to my repertoire of just like, I'm going to make some very good chicken thighs, mm-hmm. and then serve that with a side vegetable. Like, it's not like I have to go and like find a very fancy recipe that takes hours and hours and hours to cook. Now I can just be like, here's a side dish. Here's a good protein that I know how to make. I can freeze it during a lazy weekend day. And then just like, you know, 4 o'clock, I'll heat the water up, drop the bag in, and then at dinner time, sear it off, and it's good to go. And it takes no time at all. It's so good.
This has also become Griffin's go-to present for somebody if he is trying to figure out like a thing for somebody that likes to cook. This is like, do they have a sous vide? No. Yeah. Okay, that is what I'm getting.
I think I've gotten it for everybody at this point. It's also the present that people sleep on. They're like, oh, thanks. And then I get a text from them like 3 months later.
It looks intimidating
to me. It's wicked not, though. Like, that's the thing I want to stress. Because I'm going to get goopy here. But I think it would be a good thing for people to do if they are at home. They are just sort of like struggling because they don't feel a sense of like creative satisfaction in any way. And they're looking for something. Making food for me is like very creatively satisfying because you make it and you feel proud of yourself because you made a good thing. And then also you get to eat it. And that is like, you know, that's why chefs chef, right? And but like it was hard for me to really scratch that itch with these long ass recipes that wouldn't turn out very good.
Yeah.
This is a way that like it'll slot really nicely into your day, and then you get really, really good meals that you can impress people with and eat and be satisfied by. And it's not that fancy. It really isn't. It's really easy.
We're talking a lot about meat, but there's like a lot of stuff you can do.
Yeah,
in there,
sure.
We haven't even tried
that. You can make really, really good eggs this way. You can make creme brulee this way. You can make any vegetable that you want to cook through perfect. Anything you vacuum seal is going to get cooked right. You just may have to do a little bit of finishing too. But yeah, I it has changed cooking for me in a major way, and taught me a lot about sort of like heating food, like how the way that food likes to be heated up. Even when I'm not sous vide cooking, like I understand like when something is done now because I've seen it done perfectly.
Yeah.
Sous vide, man, it's powerful and good, and I love it, and I'm enthusiastic about it. I have some stuff here about the history of it, but it's boring. But a chef and a scientist work together. The end.
Well, I don't want to stop you. Do you want to talk about anything about the chef and the scientist, or
it was like the 70s and they were just like doing it. The chef was working on foie gras and decided that like doing it in submersion was the way to go, and then the scientist added sort of vacuum sealing into the mix, and then the two of them collaborated and sous vide came out of that. Yeah. Hey, what's your second thing?
My second thing is somebody that I did not know much about, but I wanted to explore a little bit, and I thought she was pretty wonderful.
Okay.
It is Jeanette Rankin.
Jeanette Rankin, that name is familiar.
Mm-hmm. She is the first woman to hold federal office.
Oh, okay. That's why.
Yeah. She was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives from Montana in 1916 and again in 1940.
Hell yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's a huge spread, uh-huh. Jeanette. Wow.
So she lived till 92.
Whoa, damn.
And had a super long career. She kind of started as a social worker when that was a relatively new thing. So again, so she's born in 1880.
Whoa, okay.
Which is even before Montana was a state. And then she probably among few women in her time period, went to college and then went to school to become a social worker. And then kind of lived all over the country. She spent some time in New York. She spent some time in Seattle and kind of built on the whole cause of women's suffrage, which she gained some recognition for, and then became president of the Montana Women's Suffrage Association. This was back when suffrage was a state-by-state quest.
Yeah.
So there was no amendment at this time. It was just each state would decide whether or not they were going to let women vote. And that kind of continued when Rankin gained office. It was still not an amendment. And so she gained office and was the first woman elected to the House of Representatives in 1916. And she gave a speech when she won. She said, "I am deeply conscious of the responsibility resting upon me," because she was the only woman with voting power in the country. Can you imagine?
That is wild.
So here's something that is interesting about Jeanette Rankin. She was a pacifist, did not believe in war, made that very clear in her platform, was still elected. Turns out she's elected in 1916. 1917, Congress wants to go to war on Germany.
Yeah.
So here's
war on Germany.
Goes to war on Germany.
I'm going
to
do a war on you. That'll show you.
U.S. dropped a big old war.
Dropped a big war right on them, huh?
So she voted against that war, which you can say may not have been the right call. But she said, years later, she said, "I felt the first time the first woman had a chance to say no to war, she should say it."
Yeah.
She felt very strongly just that war was not the way to solve a problem.
In general, I think that that's true.
Yeah.
There's certainly other ways to solve problems.
So by 1917, women had been granted some form of voting rights in about 40 states. And so Rankin, as a member of Congress, created a committee on women's suffrage. And then in January 8, 1918, the committee delivered its report to Congress. And Rankin opened the debate. After ratification by three-fourths of the state, it became the 19th Amendment.
All right.
Yeah. In 1918, she ran for Senate and lost. Unfortunately. So then she spent some time just kind of doing some community organizing around the country, doing a lot of work for the labor movement.
Yeah.
She spent some time with miners. She spent some time getting people the right to an 8-hour workday. And then in 1940, at the age of 60, she showed up again in Congress.
Guess who's back? Back again. Rankin's back.
And she was the only member of Congress to vote against the declaration of war on Japan. She was just completely destroyed for this. When she voted against it, everybody was encouraging her to abstain because they knew that she didn't believe in war and was going to vote against it.
Right.
Including her own brother. She received a cable. So she's one of six. Her brother was very wealthy and financed a lot of her campaign. Her brother sent her a cable that said, "Montana is 100% against you."
Good Lord. Thanks, bro.
After she voted, a crowd of reporters pursued her into a cloakroom, and she had to call the Capitol Police to escape, basically. She said, "Everyone knew that I was opposed to the war and they elected me, and I voted as the mothers would have had me vote." So she was principled.
Yeah, sure.
Like, say what you will about whether or not she was right. She was definitely principled. After she finished her time in Congress, because perhaps understandably she did not run for re-election,
right.
People did not respond well to her vote. She spent a lot of time traveling. She went to India and studied the pacifist teachings of Gandhi. And then in the 60s and 70s, and granted, this is when she is like in her 80s.
Yeah.
She mobilized in response to the Vietnam War.
Damn.
In 1968, she led a coalition of women's peace groups and organized the largest march by women since the suffrage parade of 1913. She led 5,000 participants to the Capitol building. Apparently, even in her 90s, in 1972, she considered a third House campaign.
Hell yeah, get on that Robert C. Byrd track.
But at that point, she had significant illnesses.
Yeah.
She died in 1973 at the age of 92. She left her estate to start a scholarship fund. So this is a annual educational scholarship for low-income women 35 and older. So she started with a single, or the foundation rather, started with a single $500 scholarship in 1978, and the fund has since awarded more than $1.8 million in scholarships to more than 700 women.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that cool? It's specifically women 35 and older, which I love. You know, I mean, as a woman who had a lot of success in her older years, I feel like she's saying like, hey, it's not too late to get started.
Yeah.
As of 2019, she is still the only woman that has been elected to Congress for Montana. I don't know.
Wow. Oh, yeah. My God.
Yes. Isn't that crazy? I mean, which speaks to how challenging, like, and what an accomplishment it is.
Yeah.
She told in 1972, so a year before her death, she spoke at the Montana Constitutional Convention, and she said, "If I am remembered for no other act, I want to be remembered as the only woman who ever voted to give women the right to vote."
That's,
isn't that incredible?
Yeah, that's really neat.
How cool is that to like to be somebody kind of at the forefront and then to get to make the vote that like ensures that everybody else will get to vote as well.
It's fucking radical.
It's a cool lady. I didn't know a lot about her. You know, you hear about a lot of the kind of the notable women in history, and she was not somebody I knew a lot about. So it's cool to discover her over the past few days.
Yeah. A lot of notable women this episode. Her, Carly Rae Jepsen.
Yeah.
I guess that's it. You.
Oh, thanks.
Hey, can I tell you what our friends at home are talking about?
Yes.
Well, of course, I'm going to tell you as I find them, the notes. Here they are. Grace says, "I find jigsaw puzzles just wonderful. There's something so satisfying about finding the exact little place a puzzle piece is meant to be in such a vast picture. I love watching the picture build and the rush of realizing two groups of pieces actually belong together in one big puzzle chunk. It gives me a real sense of accomplishment."
So much puzzling out there right now.
I remember reading an article about how like puzzles are scarce. Like, there's a puzzle shortage.
I like to think that there is one executive at the top of the puzzle ladder that just like woke up, saw the news, and was like, "Oh, that's terrible. Wait a minute.
Fire up the presses.
Get ready. Get those puzzles ready.
Let's go." Katie says, "When a recipe calls for packed brown sugar, I've always loved that it holds its shape and looks like a little sugar sandcastle when you pour it from the measuring scoop into the recipe." This one hit me hard.
I have been doing a lot of that. So I've been making a lot of muffins these days. They almost always call for brown sugar. It is like, it's like kinetic stand. It's like that texture is just so pleasing. It
smells good too. Man, I love the way brown sugar smells. That's weird, but it's true. Hey, you know what else is weird but true? Bowen and Augustus let us use our theme song, "Money Won't Pay." You can find a link to that in the episode description. And thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network.
Thank you, Maximum Fun, for hosting our show, for hosting all of the great shows. I absolutely love this network and the community of people. I would encourage anybody and everybody to go to MaximumFun.org and discover a new show.
Or Rachel will find you in your house.
I will find you, and I will give you the biggest hug, and I will say, come on, let love in.
Yeah, maybe that's our positive affirmation this week.
Let love in.
Is just leave. Just wait for Rachel to come to your house. Leave a window open for Rachel.
Leave a glass of wine.
Leave a glass of wine on the counter. She'll be there. She likes a Merlot.
Leave a chair open.
Leave a chair for, well, two chairs. One for
Elijah.
Elijah.
Mm-hmm. And one for me.
And one for Rachel. She'll be there.
And I'll hug that chair.
She'll hug that chair. She'll hug Elijah as well.
Yeah. No, this is remarkable, actually, because I am not much of a hugger, as you all know. But in this time...
And this time, it's the worst possible time for you to be a hugger. What are you doing? Don't go to people's houses and hug them.
Okay. Money won't pay. Work it all day. Money won't pay. Work it all day. Money won't pay. Work it all day.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Hey, podcast fan. We have a quick favor to ask. We'd like to get a better idea of who you are and what you care about. So if you have a couple moments to spare, go to MaximumFun.org/ad survey. There, we've got a short, anonymous survey that won't take any more than 10 minutes to fill out. Plus, if you finish it, you'll get a 10% discount on our merch at the MaxFun store. MaxFun shows have always relied on support from our members and always will. The survey will help keep the few ads we do run relevant and interesting for you. Again, that's MaximumFun.org/ad survey, all one word. And thanks for your help.